Across east of England, people are running into the wall Sadie is about to describe. Sadie is fictional. The wall is not. This is their story. In St. Albans, physics graduates who want to teach cannot access the training programs that would put them in front of empty physics classrooms where students wait for teachers who never arrive. The University of Hertfordshire has the courses, the facilities, and the candidates, but Treasury spending rules have severed the connection between need and provision.
I've always been drawn to physics because it reveals how the world actually works beneath the surface appearances. Growing up in St. Albans, my secondary school physics teacher, Mrs. Chen, had this gift for making quantum mechanics feel as real as the pencil in your hand. She'd use everyday objects to demonstrate wave-particle duality, and suddenly the abstract became concrete. I spent 2 years after university working for a renewable energy consultancy, but every evening when I was tending my heritage tomatoes in the little garden behind my flat, I found myself sketching out lesson plans in my head. The patience required to grow something from seed reminded me why I wanted to teach. Both processes need time, attention, and faith that small actions compound into something meaningful. In September 2023, I applied for physics teacher training through the University of Hertfordshire's PGCE program. I'd researched everything, the course structure, the placement schools, even the commute from my flat. The admissions process went smoothly until I met with Dr. Matthews, the admissions tutor. He explained that while my application was strong and they'd be happy to offer me a place, there was a problem with funding. The teacher training bursary for physics had been reduced from £27,000 to £15,000 for the East of England region. The Department for Education says there's insufficient budget allocation for regional variations, Dr. Matthews told me across his desk, which was covered in similar applications from other would-be physics teachers. I asked what that meant exactly. He explained that the DfE had to work within spending limits set by the Treasury, and regional adjustments hadn't made the cut this year. It sounded reasonable at the time. Governments have budgets. Sometimes there isn't enough to go around, but the numbers didn't add up for me personally. Even with the £15,000 bursary, I'd be looking at a significant drop in income for the year-long training program. I couldn't afford my rent on that amount, let alone living expenses. I deferred my application and moved back in with my parents, taking on part-time physics tutoring to keep some money coming in. By January 2024, I was frustrated enough to contact the Department for Education directly. I spoke with an official in teacher recruitment who confirmed what Dr. Matthews had told me. "We have to work within the envelope we're given," she said. "Treasury spending constraints mean we can't increase regional allocations this year." Again, this sounded like a reasonable explanation. The government has to balance its books like any household. But something about the situation nagged at me. I decided to visit my old school, Samuel Ryder Academy, to see Mrs. Chen and talk through my options. She'd retired, but the current head teacher, Mr. Williams, was happy to chat. He showed me around the science department, and I was struck by what I saw. 3 physics teacher positions were unfilled. Classes were being covered by supply teachers or maths teachers stepping in reluctantly. In one lab, a group of Year 11 students were working through a textbook exercise on electromagnetic induction because there was no qualified teacher available to demonstrate it properly. "We desperately need physics teachers," Mr. Williams said. "We've been advertising these positions since last summer." He mentioned that the University of Hertfordshire had 40 empty places on their physics teacher training course. 40 people who could be preparing to fill exactly these kinds of gaps. Walking home from the school, I passed the university's education building. I'd walked past it hundreds of times before, but this time I stopped and looked properly. Through the ground floor windows, I could see modern training classrooms equipped with interactive whiteboards, demonstration tables, lab equipment, everything needed to prepare dozens more physics teachers. The room sat empty most afternoons. The infrastructure was there. The need was there. The candidates were there. So what exactly was it that there was no money for? That's when I started to question the logic I'd been accepting. The UK government issues its own currency. It creates pounds when it spends, and destroys them when it collects taxes. It doesn't need to find pounds, hidden under a mattress somewhere, before it can spend them into existence. When Treasury officials said they had to work within an envelope, they were choosing the size of that envelope. They were choosing to create fewer pounds for teacher training while creating plenty of pounds for other priorities. The real constraint was never the money. The real constraint was whether the people existed. They did. Whether the training facilities existed. They did. Whether the schools needed physics teachers. They desperately did. Whether the materials and resources existed to train more teachers. They sat unused in those university classrooms every afternoon. The excuse wasn't a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of financial impossibility. Someone in Westminster had decided that training physics teachers wasn't worth creating the pounds to make it happen, even though every component needed for success was sitting there, ready to be connected. I'm still here, still tutoring, still watching empty classrooms and unfilled teacher training places exist side by side, while officials cite spending constraints. But I understand now what I didn't understand at the start. When I hear there is no money for something the country needs, I hear it differently. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it. Except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. What happened to me isn't just my story. It's the story of every constituency, where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard belongs to the people who built it. They choose what to put in it.
What Sadie experienced has a name: cherry picking. This technique selects rare examples where spending failed to justify never spending, while ignoring overwhelming evidence of what happens when government does invest. It's like pointing to a few failed restaurants to argue that nobody should ever open a restaurant again, while ignoring the thousands that serve meals successfully every day. In education, cherry pickers cite isolated examples of waste: a training program that didn't meet targets, a school that struggled despite funding, to argue that teacher training bursaries are unaffordable luxuries. They ignore the decades of evidence showing that properly funded teacher training produces teachers who fill classrooms where students desperately need them. They ignore the economic returns from education spending. They ignore the empty training places and unfilled teaching positions sitting side by side. The objection goes, look what happened to countries that overspent on public services. But countries that issue their own currency have never defaulted due to domestic spending. Greece, the standard example, used the euro as some. It did not issue its own currency. Nordic countries with large public sectors have lower debt crises, not higher. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. People, skills, materials, time, and in Sadie's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. St Albans ranks 519 out of 543 English constituencies on the Deprivation Index, placing it in the least deprived decile. The constituency has 3,210 registered charities and received £38.5 million in total grants according to available records. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional, every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.